Lost my heart and hope to die. If I ever, ever told a lie, feelings and guilty just said, choose a bad place when you're dead. Washington, he never lied.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic. Itself is a synthesis of Fallout, a popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hello, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host Weird. Say hello, Weird.
Well, I'm not sure you've done this before, but I believe the proper title is Sir Weirdington Esquire. you see, previous Sir Weirdington Esquires have proved unsuited to their title for daring to make mistakes of some kind, I'm given to understand, so I have replaced them. Reminder to the listener that within the K-fab of our podcast, Fi is a small horse with big dreams, and I am a resplendent a juked box
filled to the brim with organs,
and there's sort of an endless Highlander between certain iterations of Sir Whittington Esquire, each insisting upon their singularity and total uniqueness as they enforce that by violence.
each more ornery than the last. So yeah, hey folks, we're back at it again.
It's such a crass, such a new world, rapacious, would be more fitting.
But yeah, we're back at it again. We're doing this thing. Man, you think after doing like 40 of these, I would like have a better opener? But yeah, I think we should just jump right into it, Weird, and tell us what we learned last week.
Oh no, that is a thing that I had. You see, I just explained within the K-fab, I murdered the Sir Whittington Esquire, who knew that. but I mean, one of the innate rituals of our race, as you call it, is that I have devoured him and thus all of his knowledge. So let me just try and tap into that. There was. Okay. Oh, I'm getting it now. Oh, no. Okay, so we begin at the bottom of an elevator shaft.
Yes.
Rampage is denied an opportunity to be cool.
as is tradition.
She could have just walked in. Like, just walked down it.
Yep.
But she is currently baby. Babysitting the other baby, P21. And so, that left our erstwhile protagonist to explore the facility on their own. Their spirit has become intermingled with orb, and so they do not need direct contact with an orb in order to get a bunch of flashbacks in the form of ghostly hauntings of this abandoned mad science lab. She has a fight with a hybrid horse phoenix, and does them in with a Swiffer.
I'm just imagining one of those little, like, hand, like, pocket vacuums. Just. And then just, like, a little bag and just throwing it into the garbage. God. I'm still mad about that. Like, I was thinking about this, like, all week, about, like, how I didn't realize I liked Fury as much as I did until she just died so unceremoniously, like, in her, like, third appearance. Like, it was such a waste of potential of a particular Metal Gear boss fight. Just be like, and then gets beaten with a fire hose.
Welcome to Project Horizons.
Yeah, no, I know. I am finding new and interesting ways to be let down by Somber.
I mean, meanwhile, like, I assume that I am fully calloused. Like, that, like, nah, alright. Nah, it's just boring now. Wait, what?
Yeah, it finds new. It like it's one of those things where it's like, all right, I got my arms up to block my head, and then he just swings in with a body blow, gets you right in the guts.
It's like an unflinching rhythm game that like, okay, I think I've got the pattern. Oh no, the drop.
Orange buttons. What the fuck are these? Yeah.
So anyway. Does that, comes across, fights some, empty-eyed clones, unpigmented horses.
Yep, blanks that haven't been spray-painted yet.
Including a very small one, that likes cake, and will go on to be a, apparently recurring long-term, mascot. She called Boo because that's like all she can articulate, or just
No, because she's spooked easily.
Okay, that's actually kind of awful. It's like calling Kid Superman, like Boy Superman or Superboy, Kid Kryptonite. Like, I don't.
Yeah. I don't know. People like her. She's precocious and childlike and basically just an adorable little ball of fluff.
So. Who's that? Balder. Why do you, but we call him Tack. Why do you call it that? Because we lay tacks everywhere. Watch him walk over them. Like, don't worry, you can't actually be hurt by him. Well, I mean, like...
But it's funny.
Yeah.
It amuses us.
So, small dog, horse acquired. Or rather, like, traumatized invalid child that we make fun of for like being skittish acquired. Then we come to like where these markless, colorless horses are coming from, which is an eerie magitech tree that produces pod horses.
Yeah, they bud like fruit off of it. It's pretty. It's evocative.
And so there's a miniature for that, and Kingdom Death Monster, but humans instead of horses, like the balls of compressed human flesh. It's a fun game that, by which I mean it isn't. It's terrible. There's no meaningful. Anyway, tangent. We gotta keep casting the pod.
This is gonna be a long one too. So yeah.
Oh shit. Right, so we finally come across Sanguine. Turns out his character backstory is Victor Freeze, but shitty.
Yes.
Because at least in the Bruce Timm Batman, Freeze meaningfully hurt precious few people.
yeah.
But not Sanguine. With the exact same backstory. He's like really, really ruined lives of hundreds of people in his wake. including Psycho Shy. Nothing important to discuss there. Exactly as irrelevant as I always assumed.
You wish.
And my wishes become reality. Don't make me wish you into the cornfield.
No one's going to get that reference. But we got to press on.
And that's about it. Like they kind of do a fight, and then Sanguine does the generic villain thing of like, I never loved you. You were always a tool. So Psycho Shy turns on him. Is he dead?
No.
They threaten him with death.
They the plan is that they've made the deal that they're going to help him get his family back into living order, because they also need him to get Scotch's lungs back, since her lungs are now destroyed from chlorine gas from the Killing Joke.
Which is as hilarious as it is terrifying, because that would involve creating an entire new Scotch tape from scratch to kill and harvest the lungs out of.
But so they're gonna do that, and they need to access Project Chimera, and we're ended off with a cliffhanger. At least I made it into a cliffhanger because it wasn't in the original thing, of them getting up to the machine that they need to access Project Chimera, and like the reveal of like what is inside Project Chimera that's making it run. So that's where we'll start off here, I guess. So yeah, chapter 39, which I think is actually wrong, whatever. Chapter whatever this one is, it'll be in the thing, obviously. Wages of Sin. Wages of Sin. So, man. Okay, this is going to take a bunch of explanation. So, the chapter opens up with, like... So I was kind of confused about the layout of the room when it was described in the previous chapter. Like, it's basically a giant empty sphere with a tower in the middle that piping comes out of. And I thought they were at the at that machine by the end of the episode, like, at the end of the chapter. But in reality, they were, like, at the the bridge hadn't been raised down to, like, to get to the tower. And that's because that's what they're doing now. But before that happens, Blackjack has another ghost moment vision thing, which caps off the, like, Twilight wandering around in the previous chapter in the ghost visions, trying to figure out what makes Flux and what Project Chimera is. And it finally reveals what it is in this, is they can see in the cylinder, like, a statue of a fucking weird dragon horse hybrid monster. Because, okay, so to run back people who have never watched the show, in the original show, in, like, what, like, season 2's opening or whatever it was, I don't remember when Discord came in.
It was Sorry? The season 2 opener. I know, because yeah. I have seen exactly 1.5 seasons of the show, and this is the second opener, and really, really establishing the, like, once and for all, the trend of, hey, audience, here's the villain for the arc. Ha! We're kidding. We're going to solve this in the pilot, and you'll never see him again. Meaningfully.
Then we'll just go back to slice of life bullshit that doesn't matter. Which isn't always bad, but it's kind of bad in later seasons. Whatever. Doesn't matter. That's not.
It's a weird prank. It's a weird flex. Like, as the kids say, it's a weird flex.
We can make villains that just die in the second season and we go back to bake.
No, like in before the end of the first two-parter.
Yeah. Like, and then we can go back to baking and talking about our feelings. But so anyways, to actually explain this character, in the season 2 opening, it was revealed that there is a sort of trickster god villain character named Discord, who's the personification of chaos, and he's like a weird dragon horse hybrid. He's a bunch of things mixed together, but whatever. He's voiced by John DeLancey, who's just channeling Q the entire time he plays the character of Discord. And if you don't know who Q is and don't know what Star Trek Next Generation is, that's fine.
You're too young. You should be stopped. You represent the march of time and our inevitable decay and slide into our irrelevancy. Stop it immediately. Go away.
Discord is a really fan-beloved character because he's random and meme-y and, like, isn't the worst thing ever, but, like, is whatever. But the important part about it is in this story, it's revealed that what Flux is they basically they immediately, like, the Equestrian government immediately assumed Discord was going to be a problem in all this war and turmoil, so they, like, captured him and they sealed him up in a star metal tube, which star metal is, like, revealed in this chapter to, like, cancel, like, there's a bunch of dumb non-canon backstory to how magic works in this chapter that explains that basically, like, magic is all wavelengths and dumb bullshit. It's all vibrations. It's basically JoJo. And star metal destroys those frequencies. It's anti-magic. And Discord can't affect it. So they just sealed him up in a big tube of it. And then he was trapped in a statue form because it's just a thing. And they drilled holes into him. And his, like, literal lifeblood essence is Flux. It oozes out a rainbow material that can mess with, like, the properties of a bunch of stuff. And they mix it with some gems to stabilize it and keep it to cool. And so this entire facility has been just draining an overly, like, an overly fed up Discord for centuries at this point. Yeah, so they all have the moment of shock where it's like, oh, this is why the containment breach thing is set up. This would be disastrous if he ever got out, is the assumption of everybody. But anyways, yeah, we flash back to reality. BJ makes the conscious decision to go wake up Chimera. There's a bunch of stupid run back about how Skeleton Horse works, where
BJ... that's the thing I forgot to do in the summary. It turns out this entire time Skeleton Horse was the shittiest UI.
Okay, so that, but that's the thing I was about to say, is that it also doesn't matter because we get double lied to. So in the previous chapter, it's heavily implied and stated that the reason why Psycho Shy can't just fix, like, can't activate it, even though she's the daughter of Fluttershy, is the fact that Skeleton Horse won't let her. That is revealed to be a lie. He just lied to her and she believed it. And then makes fun of her for being dumb, and mocks Blackjack for also thinking that that's how it works, which is the insufferable.
Like, I mean, that's Skeleton Horse for you.
But we get a bit of backstory about him and, like, how he woke up, because, like, you know, BJ's like, okay, the cat's out of the bag, like, you're clearly not my crazy, you're, like, a weird, you're weird bullshit with this thing. And, like, yeah, and he basically reveals, he's like, yeah, I was content to, like, sleep in the program forever, knowing full well that you'll never access it. Just to cement how much of a, like, bloodline essentialist he is, it was like, I didn't care about you until you fired that gun and realized that you're something special. Because it turns out that also Trottenheim and Folly, the only people that can fire that gun, are also have to be part of the special bloodline.
Fuck.
Yeah, fuck indeed. There's a conversation about it where he says, like, well, I'm not the program, I'm just along for the ride. He's literally Clippy. Like, he can't do anything on his own, but he can teach people how to use the program to access things. Because he gives an ultimatum to Blackjack that the only way he'll help her access Project Chimera is if they immediately destroy the facility, which, I mean, is fair. It's an evil-ass facility, and people having access to, like, unrestrained cloning technology in this setting would be bad. It's just the dumbest shit.
I see y'all's trying to reignite an ancient war crime machine.
Says the Skeleton Horse. Yeah, but he's someone that's trapped inside the thing, inside the program. Like, he's not even an AI. But yeah, they argue with Sanguine about it, because he's like, I don't want to destroy my life's work. But they're like, either help us and help your family or die. Like, you don't really have a say in this conversation at all. But yeah, then we get, like, a cool, like, drawbridge moment, like, all the bridge connects together to, like, where Discord is. And apparently he can talk, like, despite being in a statuette form. He can, like, mind talk at them still, and he's just fucking, like, dying and haggard, despite, like, so this Discord comes at a really weird time in, like, his existence in the story comes at a really weird time in the context of the show, because in the show, eventually Discord is redeemed and becomes a good guy, or at least, like, a more neutral trickster god character. But in this, by the time that this was written, that hadn't happened yet. So he's instead a, like, he's presented, okay, so to, like, I guess to, like, to warn, I really like a lot of Discord's dialogue in this, because he's it's like old, dead, haggard god who's been drained of all of its life essence, and it's trapped inside of a cell for 200 years, and it's like, it immediately mocks the whole nature of the apocalyptic wasteland, where it's like, oh, you're a bad guy, you did all these horrible things to Equestria. It's like, I just, like, fucked with people and, like, did some personal shit. You people burned the earth. Like, so I enjoy him mocking them. It's the, like, It's the, like, even the devil thinks you fucked up kind of moment. But tension racks up when they activate Chimera with the dealer's help, and like a pair of signals appear. We're basically like I talked about this in the previous chapter, where there's basically a pair of signals operating from inside the core that are basically flicking an on and off switch over and over again, where one of them keeps trying to activate systems and another system, like another single, immediately comes in and tries to like deactivate it, and they don't know what that is. But they basically get told that a whole like army of evil robots is coming, so they have to move quickly. But they get a bit of time to like ask like what the fuck like Psycho Shy is gonna do now with her life, now that she's like basically irrelevant, which isn't terribly interesting, but she's just like whatever. She's gonna come up a bunch more in the story. Like, this isn't the end of her story, as she's the worst. Like, I say that about a lot of characters, but she's like really insufferable because of where her story goes.
I'm going to Disneyland.
But so in the meantime, while the rest of the crew is setting up defenses to bunker down and protect the place, BJ and Sanguine are gonna go to the cloning room to like clone up a bunch of new replacement organs for their various family members and stuff. So this is where they get into a really weird thing. So much of Sombra's writing is so bizarre in a bunch of ways, because this is going to be a weird sentence to say. BJ and Sanguine have some of the best dialogue in this entire book so far. There is a weird chemistry between these characters that somehow just kind of works and is fun. Like, Sanguine has kind of been revealed to be something of a, like, an idiot. Like, not even like an idiot, but like kind of a panicky dumbass who became a supervillain kind of by accident. So yeah, he's like wild,
like negligence and like short-sighted greed.
Yeah. So he's just wildly affable now, and so him and BJ get a bunch of like great dialogue against each other. And this is also where we get a ton of answers about the story so far, because he worked for the OIA. We get a bunch of name drops of like a dozen and a half like other projects that the OIA were all working on, including Project Horizons, Project Starfall, Project Chimera, obviously, Project Redoubt. Almost none of these matter right now. But we get the infuriating detail that Project Starfall was the code name for the OIA's mega spell development program. Because of a really bizarre trait of Project Horizons, is that the OIA are secretly behind every bad thing that has ever happened in Equestria, no matter what. Because that way it removes all culpability and responsibility from the Ministry Mayors for some reason. Like, I don't know why, outside of, like, I want my villain Sue to be the villainiest villain that has ever villained.
Well, Gorsh, they only rubber stamped all this stuff.
Well, like, that's the thing, is it's revealed more and more and more throughout the course of the story that, like, none of them knew anything about what was happening with the OIA. Like, every single division had no idea that what the OIA was doing.
I remember this this being mentioned chapters and chapters ago, and being sad and angry that, like, the agency of, like, strong women characters was being stripped and handed over to this fucking dude.
Yes. This boring ass dude, man. Like, women aren't even allowed to be villains in stories, I guess. But yeah,
the six women who were like established as the best and brightest of their generation.
Yes,
all of them, not competent enough to tell what was going on.
Yeah, it also like murders a lot of the themes of the original Fall Equestria, that like atrocities are committed by degrees, where they made small concessions that led into bigger concessions.
Oh, and no, also, this is just like, it seems to be reflected in a more recent event in the story, which was the female head of the Steel Rangers was turns out easily subverted, and like an instant coup happened.
Yes.
Under her nose.
Yeah, I didn't even really think about that. Yeah. Man, this is just sucks. Like, there's so many problems with it, but, like, I always find, like, I always find, like, the underlying gender politics really frustrating, considering how, like Sombra considers himself to be an ally, and that's just, like, really disgusting to me, personally.
He's a gross dude, and I...
Yeah, it's just, it's really, like, it's just... Yeah, I don't know what I would do if I met him. But, yeah, we also get the backstory of what happened with Psycho Shy, was that... It's a big complicated thing. We find out that Sanguine had no idea that Psycho Shy was Golden Blood's daughter as well, because it was so hush-hush that he just thought it was some like unknown soldier loser. And initially it was thought to be a miscarriage, but it actually wasn't. And in a moment I'm trying to think of the word for it. True Blood or Sanguine really didn't like Golden Blood at all, and wanted like, and didn't much like the Ministries, and wanted like something of like blackmail material. So he like kept the child, and he built his own fucking stasis thing inside his goddamn garage to keep her alive. And but the problem is that like basically it never. It never came to matter that he that because the bombs hit long before he could use this blackmail material for anything. But the only really important thing about her is that he like later on, centuries later, revived her and realized that like, oh yeah, oh boy, being inside these stasis machines fuck you up real bad. And it lit a fire under his ass to, like, save his family, which is what, like, instigated the entire plot of Project Horizons into happening, was this particular detail. That happened. We get a bunch of non-canon magic lessons about how magic works that doesn't matter and isn't important. All you really need to know is that Star Metal cancels out magic, and that's what makes it special. It's meteorite metal. It's been made into a couple of different things, including bullets. The fucking tower that Discord's in, and also importantly, BJ's magic katana is made of star metal, obviously.
Sure.
So she has an anti-magic katana.
I mean,
for some reason,
can she lift it telekinetically?
Yes, because she just lifts it from the handle, which doesn't make any sense because like how swords are constructed. But you know, fuck it. But she also uses it with her robot hands, so you know, just use it that way.
What happens next?
We're getting to that point, aren't we? Of the and-thens. But yeah, you just gotta believe me. I'm not going into too much detail about their back and forth, but believe me that, like, I just, like, ended up, like, enjoying this conversation, and I wish that Sanguine was more in the story, weirdly enough, now, because he's fun, even if he is evil.
Maybe in the future we can do... In the light of fairness, it would be worthwhile to take more selected reading clips. I mean, I did it that one time, the time I was forced to read it. Listener, don't read this. I tried. It's bad.
And it almost killed him. We went through a couple of jukeboxes that day. But yeah, I considered writing it down, but like it's... I feel like it's hard. It's like it was like hard to convey my exact feeling about like why I enjoyed it without context. But yeah, we get we also find it like that BJ got exposed to a bunch of like the pink cloud, right? So like her like barding is currently fused to her skin, and her face is all jacked up. And we get a bunch of description of like her face being messed up in the rest of this chapter, but we don't see what the consequences of this till the end. But just keep that in mind, that something's wrong with her face and no one's telling her what. But yeah, we get a cool, weird, nightmarish moment that is, like, kind of sold decently well in that, like, when, like, all of Sanguine's family gets cloned, because, like, the clones are still blanks, like, they don't have a soul, they don't have a cutie mark, and they don't have any identity, and they're just, like, a fucking animal, basically. But we get this, like, this kind of actually great moment of aesthetic juxtaposition where, like, we get a Blackjack clone because she needs to fix her skin. And, like, so we get this, like a completely blank slate to Bula Rasa, like, version of Blackjack that hasn't had all this horrible fucked up shit done to her. And her just remarking about, like, oh, God. Like, just, oh, God, I used to look like that, didn't I? Like, I used to, like... not look like a mangled pile of meat. Which, like, in a better story would be more compelling and more time would have been spent on this in general.
And also on the question of, like, why should I be the one that gets to live?
Yeah, we get a cool... And there's also, like, the garish moment of, like, them being brought into the machines that, like, harvest organs and stuff like that, and them being, like, taken apart, and Blackjack just kind of having to, like, fucking close her eyes and just being like, this is all for Scotch kind of moment of just, like, garish vivisection, basically. I was wondering where you were going with that, but yeah. It's, okay, so as much as, you know, not Newgrounds nightmare comedy, like, this is one of those ones where it's, like, a quiet moment of sort of, like, horrible atrocity that is, like, far more chilling than all of the, like, edgy violence they've done up to this point.
Except that Powerhouse is playing over it, isn't it? Powerhouse mixed with the sound of ripping flesh and saws.
And screaming, yeah. The tension ramps up some more when, like, they basically get radioed from the other room that, like, it's like, oh yeah, we managed to take out most of the other robots, but they're like, there's some kind of super robot coming that's been just chewing through the doors, like the blast doors into the building. It's just cutting through them like it's made of paper. So they need to go now. And they don't, like, so it's, there's a sort of mad scramble of them trying to, like, get all this shit together, get out before this robot kills them. Sanguine has a whole, like, thing in this where he's like he also has, like, an interesting breakdown when he sees his, like, cloned wife and cloned family, because of just, like, the years of separation and stuff. There's a lot going out of its way to try and humanize Sanguine here, which is a, like, incredibly bad trend about this particular story. Like, it'd be fine if it was done once or twice, but basically every single villain in this entire story has a, like, come to Jesus moment where they realize that they were wrong the whole time and Blackjack was so right the whole time, and that, like, their entire villainous plan has been for naught, and they, like, almost grovel at the hooves of Black Jesus. Like, doesn't sound as good as that did in my head. Whatever, Jesus Blackjack. Jesus Jack. And it's insufferable, because it would be fine. It's fine in Sanguine's case, whatever. He's a slightly affable villain who killed a lot of people. Like, there is a sentiment that, like, no, it's like, okay, cool, whatever. You're doing this for your family, but you're still pretty evil. And he does apologize, and there is kind of a point made that it kind of rings a little hollow. It's like, yeah, you can apologize to me, but you can't apologize to all the corpses you've made. Sort of vibe from it. And it would be fine if it was just Sanguine that this was being done to, but, like, future villains, and there are many in this story, almost invariably do this as well. And I'm bringing it up now, and I'll probably bring it up every other time. Like, I mean, it happened with Deus as well, where Deus is just like, I wanted you to kill me because I'm suffering in agony my whole life. And same with Gorgon. Like, Gorgon was like, I was a monster, thank you for killing me. It just becomes more and more overt. So far, Steel Rain's been the only one that hasn't done it yet.
But he's
still around.
Far and away the most absurd when it happened with Deus, because, like, it just brought up the hilarious scenario of every, like, in order for this to make any sense, every time Deus gets into a fight, he prepares, like, a inverse bug out, like, a
yeah. Well, like, the thing I always, like,
my
I would have
murderer. Congratulations.
Well, I wish it was like an editing thing where it's like dear insert murderer here, like, in dear Blackjack, thank you for killing me. It was really cool when you blew me in half with dynamite. I was suffering a lot.
But the insertions are all by, like, some sort of, like, immediate hinge, like, some sort of,
yeah,
like, Starscream analog that's been following him all this, like,
yeah,
Zazu from The Lion King or whatever.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's just kind of there. But, anyways, so to move this a little along, chapter is, like, shorter than I thought it was. I guess we just blazed through it a lot. Like, I forgot, like, why this chapter's shorter than I thought it was in a hot second, but I'll get to it. But yeah, anyways, Sanguine's having issues with trying to, like, revive his dead, like, his dead family, because they've got, like, they've been, like, filled with good clean organs, and they're not, like, and they've got rejuvenated through the magic of these stasis pods. But, like, when they get out, they immediately panic, because, like, which is kind of understandable when, like, it's like, okay, it's been 200 years of trapped inside your own sophistic, like, Metallica, like, one nightmare scenario, and then you wake up, and the first thing you say is someone who is claiming to be your husband, but looks like burnt jerky, and speaks in a raspy voice, like, you would be absolutely terrified of whatever the hell that is. So there's this, like, kind of, like, sort of trying to be heartbreaking moment, but it's hard to care because Sanguine killed a lot of people, so I don't give that much of a shit. Where he's, like, begging his family to try and believe him that he's who he says he was. And there's a lot of running around trying to catch his family from screaming and freaking out while this fucking super tank is chasing them. Like, so like, the robot busts into the room, and it's revealed to be this thing called an Ultra Sentinel, which is, like, it's, for some reason, it's basically, like, a tank on legs that's painted to look like Rainbow Dash for some reason. Like, I just don't understand the joke here, but whatever.
Sure.
Yeah, that's my feelings too. Like, I don't know why, but I guess maybe it's a joke about 20% cooler or something stupid like that. Whatever. It doesn't matter. It chases them around while they're trying to, like, get Sanguine's family. And in a moment of fucking god modding bullshit, Sanguine finally manages to calm his family down just enough that his wife, like, recognizes who he is, earnestly and truly, and there's, like, a happy little family moment, just as the tank rolls up and goes to annihilate them, and Sanguine pulls, like, a I won't let you hurt my family, like, I'm gonna try to take the brunt of the cannon shell going into my chest, when just as they're about to be vaporized, Psycho Shy, like, as a blur, saves specifically Sanguine, so his entire family gets vaporized, making the entirety of this chapter utterly pointless. It's at least reasonable why she did this, is that she was, like, she's kind of messed up and hurt and is convinced that, like, they can be a family and that he doesn't need his old family and whatever, and they can just move on. But Sanguine is, like, utterly broken by this. He's like, in this story, it's established that, like, ghouls become feral by, like, lack of exposure human contact, but, like, other pony contact. Like, if you trap them in a box in the dark, they go feral because, like, it's exposure to other people is what keeps them sane. And particularly substantial loss is what breaks them, typically. So, like, he just kind of starts going feral before their eyes, and he's just begging them to leave him to die. Which they do, because whatever. And they drag Psycho Shy away because they don't want to let her die either.
I don't see why not.
Because...
like, whatever.
Yeah, like, whatever.
So there are, like, two more likely, two considerably more rote, and frankly, in a lot of ways, vastly more interesting outcomes to this scenario. Most likely, and kind of, like, least obvious and tropey, is based on everything we know about Sanguine. He gets angry at his wife and child for disrespecting the sacrifices he's made for them in his mind. He snaps at them for their ingratitude, and breathes on them to death, like, he just melts them right there in front of the crew.
So something I just remembered, because there's mentioning of this story being there's a couple of like editor's notes about the story being rewritten after the final version. I was very confused about this plot point because I remembered this going very differently, and this is entirely anecdotal and hearsay, but I remember this scene being different. And this might just be faulty memory, or it might just be, like, it might have actually gotten rewritten. But what I thought the way this chapter ended was with Sanguine's family realizing who it is and then calling him a monster because, like, he is. Like, they realize, like, no, you're a monster. Like, you killed so many people and all this horrible shit to, like, get here. And, like, disavows him in their final moments and then, like, eats a hit almost intentionally because, like, you know, they've been trapped in a box for 200 years and they're gone completely mad. Don't know if I'm just making that up.
That's actually a third possibility that hadn't occurred to me. And that would also be, like, Nora, like, freaks out and throws herself off of a cliff.
What have you done? Yeah.
So that's two possibilities. One, he does what in my mind is the most likely thing he would do under the circumstances, because everything about him reads abuser. Like he's the entitled shit from the protagonist from the movie Falling Down. Like he would like he wants his family back because he's entitled to them and it gives him a sense of normalcy and like. Of course, he'd be willing to throw anybody under the bus for it, and like, then when it's not his ideal reunion, it makes sense to me that he would snap and like just kill them.
Yeah, sure. The thing I'll just cut in to say is that like I think, at least in this particular characterization of this particular chapter, that's wrong because he's clearly being established thematically as a supposed to be something of a man who is pushed to the brink by his love of his family. Like, he loved them so much he was willing to do anything, and that's supposed to be admirable.
Yeah,
and that's why he's
I don't like, believe it, though. Like,
I know that you don't believe it, but I'm just telling you that's the way it's written. Like, that's the way it's written, and that's the way it reads. But again, this is written by a Chud who thinks that, like, family is the most important thing in the world.
And also, Chuds, like, have sort of, like, if you listen to Jordan Peterson talk, or any of those people, like Chud philosophers, they frequently talk about how like the like layers of myopia, like look out for number one, and then after that look out for your immediate family, and after that you can look out for your immediate community, and after that you look out for your nation. And so like it makes all the sense in the world for like that sort of person to like, oh yeah, no, it makes perfect sense that he like throw thousands of people under the bus for the sake of his immediate family. And he super cares about them. But again, I'm convinced, like, he would only care about them insofar as they're an extension of himself. And if they failed to live up to that, he would...
just cloud them.
Yeah. Dispose of them. So, like, the second likely outcome that I was foreseeing, the very tropey, especially given what you've said about him in this specific chapter so far, is that, like... okay, he wants to redeem himself. He's seen the error of his ways. He gives up on convincing them of who he is, and in a sort of gift of the Magi, he turns on the tank, and clouds it as it smashes him into a pulp. But in so doing, it spells its own demise because like in destroying it, it like. Causes him to release all of the horrible cloud stank in him, and in his final moments, the wife and child like then recognize him. But like now he is gone from their lives once and for all. So like you could have a tragic gift of the Magi and let him have his like last hurrah.
I think the part that like specifically frustrates me is like. Why kill his family? Why? Like, it's one of those things where it establishes that they did nothing wrong and Blackjack was doing everything in her power to, like, save his family specifically. Like, they were unmarked civilians. Like, they weren't part of this. They're just a victim of circumstances. And they didn't do what Sanguine did. Because, and that's the whole thing.
Because
and then they die anyways.
Summer has no use for him. In his
I know it's just a utilitarian decision.
Yeah, he's already burning his entire fucking setting down. Like he doesn't doesn't need like loose threads of additional characters he doesn't personally care about.
So the worst part about this though is that like knowing what I know about the future, this story has hundreds of characters that don't matter. So like why kill these ones?
Because he doesn't care about them, he doesn't like them. He's not interested.
God. Just, I hate it.
Yep.
Like, it's, you I should. Hate, like, there's a bunch of bad. Shit that I hate about the story, but I hate, like, I hate how there's so much that could have been done to make this better. Like, even if just, like, fucking whatever, this fucking genre of fanfic is super chuddy anyways, but, like, it's just so incompetent, like, just so incompetent in so many ways that I don't get why it's so popular.
Well, we've talked about it. Like, it's the going theory is just performative cruelty.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
That people like hold it up as a thing that they insist they enjoy because
it triggers the libs.
And like, there's the hint of a notion of an idea underpinning a lot of it. Like, it is rife with unfulfilled potential.
It's rife with themes, but they're not good themes.
Well, like, in the abstract, like with time and forgetting, like, it's easy to, like, think that there's an interesting character in Blackjack. There's, like, 5 to 7 possible interesting characters in Rampage. And I mean that in a meta context rather than, oh, multiple personalities, her. Which is actually, come to think of it, in almost like, if what if Somber is a Kaufman-esque genius and like,
no, we're not going down that road. We are not Stockholming our way to say, thinking this thing is secretly great.
We're not gonna like double ring theory explain why the prequels were good.
Yeah, it's not Star happening. Wars prequels that's good. Not. There is, if you're a crazy person, you could interpret a bunch of the back half of the story like a bizarre meta critique on itself. But like, just because you wear a lampshade doesn't make the scene good.
Yeah,
like it will be my consistent argument with the later parts of this story.
But anyway, like, yeah, no, it's full of. So far, it's deeply fascinating, and I'm glad to be on this ride because it's a thing that is rife with like the germ of a good idea. Like, there's so many germs of good ideas, and then you watch the hand calm down and disinfect all of them.
Yes, or it rots the body to death. Like, right. It's not. If there is there a single thing that I could use to describe the failings of PH, it's execution. It sets up interesting ideas that it does not pay off. It sets up themes it does not meaningful impact the story. It sets up a bunch of pins and then throws the ball into a different lane. Like it sucks because it's like, oh, this could be good, but I know it doesn't pay off. But
so,
yeah, we got to get a little.
What happens next?
After Sanguine is broken and killed by a robot, they spend basically the back half of this chapter fighting a robot in an extended fight scene. Well, Blackjack has to try and like microwave her hallway round two. She has to go through a bunch of like pink cloud and radiation and flux to like activate a fire suppression system while also fighting more robots. There's a kind of grisly moment, since like I've talked about before, about Pink Cloud like fuses stuff to other stuff, where like she can't, like she's tied up in such a way that she has to like use her face to like turn the valve pipe, and like her face becomes like stuck to it, and you have to like saw off her own lips, which again, whatever, Newgrounds edginess, but like it's just a really grisly to think about. It also starts establishing the fact that like Blackjack is weirded out by like the lack of like any sort of like pain sensation of her sawing her face open. Like there's pain and blood, but it's not nearly like what it should be. Like it's all numb and weird.
Dun 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 dun.
Yes. But yeah, they have a big old slobber knocker that isn't very interesting because robots have no personality and therefore it doesn't matter. Where They're backed into the containment room for Discord, and they are. BJ pulls the Hail Mary of Hail Marys, and like, all right, she turns to the trickster god and is like, hey, can you fix this? And he's like, well, if I was released, I could turn all this into just vapor and nothing if I wanted to. And she sells him on the idea that chaos and destruction has now become the norm. So the only thing that a trickster god that's an active contrarian can do is try to become a better person. And she banks on this this logic while trying to release him. Then we just get like a dumb sequence that isn't very exciting, where they release Discord and like all hope seems lost, and then like he fucking like the genie from Aladdin's and just like turns into a bunch of dumb bullshit to fight the robot and distract it and stuff. It isn't terribly exciting, unless you think things like him turning into Godzilla to fight it is hilarious.
Passé.
But yeah, he fucks with it, and man, he manages to harm it, but he's not strong enough right now to like do much to it. Eventually the fight comes down to, I don't remember exactly how this happens, but they end up killing the tank monster with a train full of explosives, which would be exciting, but like it's just a big dumb fucking robot. It doesn't matter. Like, it has no identity. Like, if Sanguine was piling this like a mecha, maybe that would have been compelling. But one last moment as it's being exploded, it's like all its eye light sensors like flash green, and it starts like shrieking in like a robotic voice about wanting to live and demanding Blackjack give over the Maltese.exe before being exploded, which is just foreshadowing for something that happens later. But you know, right. Whatever. Then we get into our denouement of the chapter. They get into like the service elevator to like get back up to ground floor. And while they're having that, everyone's like kind of awkwardly trying not to stare, but are staring at BJ, who makes a joke about like, oh, is there something wrong with my face? And they're like, yeah, kinda. And they like show her like a polished piece of metal so she can get a good look at her face. And like, this is another of those things where like, I think it's interesting because it's like cool cyborg nightmare shit. She's like all Terminator. Like, basically, like, it's revealed that like how much robotic she actually is far more robotic than was like kind of alluded to. Like, basically most of her face is now like metal, and it like, so there's like this really grisly like synthetic muscles and like frame of, like wireframe of metal, and that's like wired into the muscles in her neck. And when we were like mocking about how she's basically just a sliver of skin like layered over a robotic horse, that's not entirely wrong. She's got more meat than not, but her face is way more jacked up than she initially assumed.
Is the ancient like personified manifestation of entropy like still hanging around, or
he basically went like, well, later, nerds, and they just bounced into the story. He'll be back later. Of course he will. He's up to go do Q things.
Really, like, a total coin toss. That's where my expectations are of this story. Like, I would be totally unsurprised either way.
Yeah. Yeah, he just disappears in a puff of magic and is like, bye. But yeah, there's a really insufferable dialogue between her and Rampage, which would be the character that would likely understand this a lot more than basically everybody else, but she's just there to be, like, annoying. Where, like, Blackjack is talking about, like, how much it freaks her out that she's, like, she feels a lot less human than she, like, initially thought now. Like, she feels so much more artificial, which is still, like, I still hate that as a dialogue because, it, like, again, it implies that, like, you know, people with prosthetics are like less human than people because they have less like physical meat, but you know, whatever. Theory
makes sense coming from a shallow, you know, cop like DJ. So
yeah, it's to sell the like cyber psychosis like angle of it, that like cybernetics are innately bad because they make you evil, because they strip away your humanity, and not like bad because like people own physical parts of your body and like capitalism, but whatever. But yeah, Rampage mocks her, which is dumb because she's basically like, bitch, 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 like you're stronger than ever. And it's like, Rampage, you want to die literally all the time because you're immortal. Like, shut up. You would understand the...
Kissed her.
What? Yeah. Kissed her mangled metal mouth. But yeah, they get to the... Like, it's also, like, important to remember, too, they now have cases full of organs. They've been transporting up to this, like, after this, once they blow up the facility. And, like, it shouldn't be as funny to me, but, like, it's kind of funny in a black comedy way. That, like, they just have a container that has an entire blackjack skin in it on cold ice. Like, it's just an entire, like, blackjack pelt.
Yeah.
In a box. But yeah, they get to the medical center that they that Glory has been keeping Scotch at. The guards there are kind of like freaked out by, like, they initially go to attack Rampage because, like, not Rampage, Blackjack, because she looks like a Terminator now. Like, so the thing is that, like, I think it would have been a much cooler idea if Blackjack just kept losing parts of herself in a kind of linear way throughout the course of the story, where it's revealed increasingly more and more that she's just, like, it's just a ship of Theseus thing where she's getting replaced with more and more cybernetics over the course of it slowly, or there's more and more revealed that she's, like, more, like, she's basically just a robot that thinks it's Blackjack. Would be a cool, like, kind of cell, or it's a Blackjack brain inside of a robot body would also be kind of a cool concept. But, like, this is, like, the only reason why she loses her skin in this scene is because it gets immediately replaced, so it doesn't matter. And it just kind of, like, is a bummer. Like, it... Story's, you know, in a sense, big on consequences. Not really, but it's big on physical consequences. So the idea of, like, Blackjack, like, losing parts of herself in a way that, like, sells the concept of sacrifice would be a bigger deal to me. I also fucking, I have this in my notes. I don't know when this happened, but at some point, 21 now has a cowboy hat that he just wears all the time. Like, he gets it in this chapter. I don't know from where, but he just is now always wearing a cowboy hat. Because, like, he has no descriptive affectation like Blackjack does, so I guess he needed something. So now he's got a cowboy hat on.
I'm suddenly reminded of, apparently somebody... in an interview or something with Araki, the mangaka, the author of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, wherein he talks about how one of his characters had been a smoker, and he wanted him to switch over to vaping, and, like, spent an hour or so thinking about how to do that, where and when to, like, mention the changeover. And then he went, wait a minute, no, this character would just do it. And so, like, then he just did it. Then, all right, next issue, he's now vaping. Like, he's...
yeah, so he just has a cowboy hat on now. But anyways, our chapter is booked in with a, like, goofy, dumb sequence. Also, at some point, Blackjack gets a safe code. It gets her access to a pair of new shiny guns called Duty and Vigilance. No, Duty and Sacrifice. Vigilance is a different gun.
God damn it. Fucking goddamn. All right, Fi, is there anything else we could...
I'm not done yet. I'm almost...
No!
I tricked you by accident because I'm an idiot and I paced these badly.
Okay, what next?
So, one last stupid thing is BJ and Glory reconcile. And, like, Glory, because, you know, and two chapters ago she's now Rainbow Dash, she's like, okay, my solution to that is I'm just gonna dye my hair so that I don't look like Rainbow Dash, which seems like a really smart idea. So she just, like, whipped up a bunch of chemicals to make like hair dye and just, like, dyed her hair out. But we get revealed because, like, I get, like, I don't, it doesn't, like, it's just the dumbest, like, oh, but wait, The Killing Joke makes it so that she can't dye her hair, which feels like, it just goes back to Rainbow, and, like, it literally feels like some commenter bitched at Somber that why didn't she just dye her hair? So he just went, well, she can't, because it's just magic makes it so it doesn't work.
Because, you see, The Killing Joke can't work if it's not funny. So it can adapt itself to maintain the joke, unless it's a protagonist, and it'd be too difficult to like explain.
Unless the writer couldn't think of a good way to make it not the most overpowered garbage.
Well, that is a thing that happened and was mentioned, and I'd completely forgotten about the Fallen.
His Rainbow
totally
Dash.
Rad guy.
Yeah.
Half-hearted Rainbow Dash voice. Anything better we could be reading right now?
Well, you did mention that you're gonna be promoting something. All
right, but I wanted to find out if you had a thing. Anyway, I do have a.
So well, I can also make recommendations, but yeah, go ahead with yours, and then I'll just like throw a small one in.
Instead of reading this shit, what you could be doing is watching these extremely long, almost podcast like episodes, uploads to a YouTube channel called Kit Boga. So that's KITBOGA. Kit provides a unique service to us, the internet, and to a certain degree the world at large. Kit is perhaps the best, the most almost unnaturally powerful in a brand of YouTube channel called Scambaiters. So what Kit does is he gets a phone number, and he gets it. He does some simple thing to get it on like any number of a dozen call lists for Indian scam call centers. And then he creates a virtual machine inside of his computer, which is a replica of a operating system inside of his computer. And he baits them into connecting to his virtual machine, and just takes them for a merry fucking ride. Like wastes hours of their time at a stretch in what I can only describe as like a live action Looney Tunes cartoon. Like one commenter I think really nailed it on the head. Kit Boga doesn't merely scam bait. What Kit does is improvisational comedic theater, wherein not all of the participants realize they have a starring role. Like he alchemy like transmutes the tragedy and horror of Indian fake call center, fake tech support, fake IRS call scams, and turns them into wacky comedy sketches, much to the unknowing chagrin and like mind-melting aggravation of these scammers. But I kind of bring it up because not only is it the thing that I've been doing, sort of the only thing I've been doing the last couple days, while my kidneys mutilate me from the inside, it also makes me really sad because here's the twist. So, like, this has given me a better appreciation for what it's like for these Bengali. They're mostly Bengali. These Indian and Bengali call center workers. Because these scams are an inevitable result of the sort of globalized capital exploitation of India in this way. Like these call centers are an inevitable consequence of so if you look up stats on what Bengali is like to live in, about a quarter of the population lives well below the poverty line. And about half of all, air quotes, drinkable water is poison. And that basically is your mood setter. That basically gives you an idea of, like, the desperation and horror of day-to-day life for the average person in Bengali. I don't know if you, the listener, have ever worked at a call center, but it is a nightmare. It's painful. It's aggravating.
It's humiliating. It's embarrassing.
And now imagine all of that with even less human rights, with even less hope for the future, even lower income, even fewer protections against an abusive boss.
Yeah, harder working conditions, more, you know, less rights overall. Just so absolutely bad time.
So imagine yourself as a legit call center employee, a legit tech support, what have you, person working in Bengali, and somebody approaches you before or after you're randomly laid off. Someone approaches you and said, "Hey, how would you like to do this job? Except two things. You will be paid 2 to 5 times more. And two, all of these, like, morons, these people incapable of critical thinking who make your life a living hell day in, day out, on the lines. What if you got to destroy them? You know what? Through the veil of ignorance, like, I like to think of myself as a man who's deeply concerned with right and wrong and, tries his damnedest, goddammit, to be the best person he can. Under those circumstances, I think I would sign up without hesitation, for that sort of work. Vengeance and a something approaching a standard of living, yes. And so it makes the drama of this channel all the more interesting to watch, understanding that there's a hideous tragedy happening here. Like, Kit has the, like, high ground. Like, he very clearly sees himself as a kind of vigilante, and honestly, he is. Like, every hour he spends tying these people up and, like, seeing to it that they just don't have the spoons to, like, keep going, and, like, just making sure that, like every minute he's on the phone with them is a minute he's spared some grandma of losing her entire savings. But on the other hand, like, he's also making, like, again, imagining myself in the shoes of one of these Bengalis, I would, in their shoes, take that deal at the drop of a hat, but I would also wake up every morning in a cold sweat.
Yeah, like, it's, I don't know, like, I've talked about this before, like, before the pod, that I think it doesn't, like, feel as good, I guess, like, the like, schadenfreude and, like, justice doesn't feel as, like, delicious when you really consider that it's just, like, some yahoo, like, fucking with poor people, basically, and not, like, actually, like, doing really anything to, like, disrupt the system on which they, like, depend their lives upon so that they could, like, live in a better life in a less morally compromised situation. So I feel like that just, like, that part just makes the whole, like, the whole exchange kind of less fun as a concept, because, like, but, like, that's capitalism for you, baby. It's fucking, you can't touch the people that make your lives hell. You just can't. They're fucking invincible.
So yeah, there's like three layers of cannibalism here. Like, these workers are being incentivized and galvanized to victimize, mostly retirees,
they're being exploited to exploit others.
Yeah,
they're
deeply ignorant.
They're being
Americans.
Taught how to shoot people,
and, like, then in turn, this dude exploits them for views and YouTube revenue.
Yeah, and AdSense review money. Yeah,
yeah.
So I don't know. That feels a little bit less cool to me personally.
Well, like,
but
so, like, I mean, it makes it less sort of fun and funny, but at the same time, like, it's a window into, like. Like, if you watch it critically, like I've been doing, like, I'm deeply fascinated in, like, their responses to, like, his chicanery. He's a goddamn artist. Like, he's a brilliant performer and writer and technician, and so that's worth watching. And also, like, it took a few of these videos for me to really understand, like, really begin to grok the wrong being done to them, because I got a sense of, like, the humanity of these con artists, these scammers, and, like, the lengths that they'll go, the degree to which they'll humiliate themselves in order to, like, get the grift to go through, is harrowing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, there's a lot at stake.
Yeah.
Think about it. So it makes sense. Desperate people will try anything, as it goes. Yeah.
So on that cheerful note, you can contact us.
Yeah, you can contact us at thouartfi on the Twitter at WeirdingtonE for weird. Email us directly at Weirdington's Gmail account, which is WeirdingtonESQ@gmail.com. You can also donate directly to Weird to the Save a Weirdington Esquire fund by donating to the Ko-Fi. We will eventually get Patreon set up with bonus episodes that you'll be able to pay into at something about the $5 mark. I forgot to recommend what I was going to recommend, but don't, whatever. It was just going to be some dumb romantic pony shit.
You can look forward to that next week.
Yeah, look forward to next week. Talk about changelings for a super long time.
Oh, no! We're going to do what? No! I don't want there to be a next week! There can't be a next week! Fine! No, this has all been a terrible mistake!